Well, I said this morning, Royce talked about rejoicing, so I've got to talk about something different. We're going to talk about fighting. So in the book of Philippians, we are brought to the attention of a story of two women, and it occurs only one time. It's just two little verses that talk about it, but I think there's a story there that we can learn from. So I call this the E&S principle, because I can't pronounce either one of their names very well for very long, so I'm just going to shorten it to E&S. These ideas and these principle lessons, what I like to do on this is just how do people handle things? Because it's things that we face all the time in our own lives, and it's just common to human nature. And these are not necessarily stories where I believe that the Bible is commanding us, thou shalt do this in this situation, but it's just kind of a roundabout approach. How do godly people handle problems? And so kind of our focus tonight with these two women, how do we handle it when people under us quarrel? When people that we are responsible for fight? How do we handle that? How do we handle fighting? How do we handle disputes and disruption amongst people that we are supposed to be responsible for? Because that's kind of the situation that the Apostle Paul found himself in. So all we read about this comes from Philippians, the fourth chapter, and there's only two verses, or a text, we'll read verse 2. And Paul says, I implore, here's my first word, Euodia, which is how I'm going to call her, E, Euodia, and I implore Syntyche, which I'm going to refer to as S, to be of the same mind in the Lord. So we have this dispute between these two women, and I'm going to look at some ideas and some thoughts. How did Paul deal with these two ladies? How did Paul handle this? And the Apostle Paul, I suppose, had several options at his disposal. How he could have handled the dispute at Philippi. He was the one, after all, he had started this congregation. He was the one that had gone down to the river, as you recall, and had converted Lydia, and had converted this Philippian jailer while he was sitting in jail. And that congregation owed its existence to the work and the effort of the Apostle Paul. And as we've read through this book this month, Paul was very, very tight with this Philippian congregation. They had supported him financially. They had supported him physically. And Paul could pretty much tell them what he wanted to tell them. They were a very tight-knit group, very much like a family, very, very close-knit group. So Paul had a lot of tricks at his disposal. So I want to notice a few things about how Paul handled this dispute between these two women, E and S, Euodias and Syntyche. That's why I say E and S. And his response forms the basis of what I'm going to call the E and S principle. But before we go further, let's go to God now. Well, I'm going to begin our study this evening with just a basic assumption. I really don't know what the disagreement between S or E and S was. The Bible doesn't tell us. It doesn't say any more than what we just read in verse 2. Where Paul implored them to be of the same mind in the Lord. So I'm going to make a basic assumption here. Being that I have no idea what the dispute was, between the two women was about, I'm going to assume it was not of a scriptural nature. I'm going to assume it was something personal between these two women. I don't know what it could have been. I know I've seen things in my own life, but with my own eyes, I've seen how people can bicker over sometimes the silliest of meaningless of things. I don't know if it was that. I don't know if it was something more to it. But I'm going to assume that it was not a scriptural nature. And the reason I say that is because when faced with doctrinal issues in the church, Paul never was one to mince words. And he made sure he explained it. Let me give you a couple of examples. 1 Corinthians 5 and 11. Remember there was a situation in the Corinthian church where a man was kind of living in a rather immoral living situation. Paul didn't back off to it. He said, but now I have written to you not to keep in company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person. Now, that's not very, that's not tiptoeing around anything. Paul got right in the middle of him and said, this is how it's going to be. When he saw sin and he saw something that was ripping apart the church, that was of a doctrinal issue, Paul made sure he made his thoughts very well known. 1 Corinthians 11 and 17, one of the more famous ones, talking about the Lord's Supper. He says, now in giving these instructions, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse. Wow, that is harsh, because it was doctrinal. And so the Apostle Paul would not back off on something that's doctrinal. Galatians 1 and 8, which we just studied last month. But even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. Paul didn't mess around when it came to doctrinal issues. So being that that's the case, I'm going to make this basic assumption that whatever the battle was between S and E was something of a personal nature. Maybe they just didn't like each other. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't get along. I don't know. But that's all we can know. We just don't know anything about their situation. So here's the players. We've got the Apostle Paul. Remember, he was the one that had established the church there at Philippi. And he is very, very tight with them. The Philippian brethren have supported him, and it's been a very back and forth situation this whole time. Well, now we have Euodia on one side and Synecdoche on the other side, and they are fighting. I don't know anything about any of these two women. I've read some things, but I will tell you, anything that you read is just subjection. It's, nobody has any proof of anything. It would just be speculation. In fact, I was reading one. It's kind of interesting. Remember how the congregation of Philippi started? Paul went down to the river, and there was a woman there named Lydia who was selling purple. And so she was the first convert. Some people say that that name Lydia really wasn't a proper name back in those days. There wasn't women named Lydia back in that time. Lydia was a regent. And so maybe it'd be like calling somebody Tex. That's from Texas. I remember an old John Wayne movie. Actually, I remember two of them. One time, one of the characters' name was Mississippi. He carried around a little sawed-off shotgun. That was his character. His name was Mississippi, because that's where he was from. And remember, there was another one. His name was Colorado. I'll go ahead and let you guess where Colorado came from. But some people think that that was kind of the case with Lydia, that maybe that really wasn't her given name, but rather she was just the woman from Lydia. Lydia was a region in that area. And some people have come up with the conjecture that maybe one of these two women was actually Lydia. But that is all just speculation, because nobody knows anything about E or S. I don't know who they are, where they came from. I don't know if it was Lydia. I don't know if they're fighting about. I don't know if they were young. I don't know if they were old. All I know is that they had a dispute, and the Apostle Paul found himself right in the middle of it. So I want to think about some similar situations here. Because what we have in this case is we have a church leader, and we have church members. So we have someone who has a position of responsibility, the Apostle Paul, and people that are below him, members of the church, that they are responsible to him, are fighting. Yeah, we can kind of stretch this analogy, I think, a whole bunch of different ways. I was going to start out by saying, it's kind of like you have the president, and maybe he's got some cabinet members quarreling underneath him. Well, I changed it. Maybe you're the mayor, and you've got some councilmen or some council members arguing and bickering about something. And that mayor is actually responsible for the actions of that council. And so that's the mayor's responsibility to fix that fight, right? I thought about it from an educational standpoint, because several of us are involved with education. It's like the principal who is responsible for the actions of the teachers. And you got a couple of teachers that are bickering and complaining back and forth. What does that principal do? How does the principal fix it? Maybe go up one level for Royce. Maybe you got a superintendent. And the superintendent has administrators below them bickering. How does the administrator handle it? What about the teacher? The teacher has students fighting in the classroom. There's a little battle going on. How does the teacher handle it? What about the coach of the team? The coach has players bickering. How does the coach handle it? You can't cut them all. You can cut Dez Bryant, but you can't cut all of them. What does the coach do if the players are fighting? What does the captain of the football team do if some of the players under him are fighting? What about the boss? If you're the boss or you're the manager and some of your employees aren't getting along and there's bickering, how does the boss handle that situation? Now, I think I've pretty much covered everybody. And if I haven't, how about this one? What about parents who have children that are constantly fighting? Or grandparents who are watching their grandkids and the grandkids are fighting, or aunts and uncles watching their nephews and nieces and they fight. What if you're in a position of authority and the people below you are fighting? How do you handle it? It's not. It may not be a real big deal, like Apostle Paul. I mean, I don't think it was anything major, but it was enough to cause a dispute and a disruption in the church. So that's where the E&S principle comes from. How do we handle bickering and fighting and quarreling with people that we are responsible for? So hopefully you can put it into a whole bunch of different situations. So number one, E&S principle, offer good, consistent, biblical advice. Which is exactly what the Apostle Paul did. The Apostle Paul, did you see his advice? I want you to be of the same mind, he said. He said, I implore both of y'all, E and I implore S, to be of the same mind in the Lord. Now, did the Apostle Paul just pull that out of his head? Was that the first time the Apostle Paul had ever made that statement, I want you to be of the same mind? No. He was giving good, consistent, biblical knowledge. That Greek word there, to think the same thing, that's where that comes from. Six other times, just in the book of Philippians, he had exhorted the Philippian congregation to be of the same mind, or to have some type of, translation of that. But the idea is the same. I implore you to be of the same mind in the Lord. I want you to be on the same page. I want you to be driving in the same direction. I want you to be on each other's sides. I want you to do what you're supposed to do. For example, I'll turn back to Philippians 1 and 7. It reads like this. Just as it is right for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my chains and the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you are partakers with me of grace. So sometimes it's maybe translated different words, but there is this idea that we're all in this together. He said, be of the same mind. So when he talked to E and S, he didn't all of a sudden change his story. He just reinforced the same concept that he'd been trying to preach. I think there's a lesson to that. People want to fight underneath this. Give consistent, good advice. Now, I realize some of those examples I used, you may not be in a position where you can quote Bible and verse in the workplace or wherever you might be, but you sure can live it. And people say, well, they're taking God out of schools. Not necessarily. God can still be in schools because of the way that people live and the way that people act. Give solid biblical advice. This idea of being consistent, boy, the Apostle Paul is consistent. There's three different passages I gave you. He gave the exact same advice. Be of the same mind. So it's not like he came out of the woodwork and came up with some strange thing to kind of stop this fight. No, it was the same consistent message. 1 Corinthians 1 and 10, I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing. Same thing he told the Philippians. He goes on to say that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. 2 Corinthians 13, 11, be of good comfort, be of one mind, live in peace. Romans 12 and 16, be of the same mind toward one another. So the advice that the Apostle Paul gave to E and S was nothing different than what he'd given to anybody. He told the Romans, he told the Corinthians, he told the Philippians, everybody, be of the same mind. Sometimes we just need to be reminded that the rules apply to us as well. You know, so we can read something and see what we're supposed to do, and we can think about how that applies to everybody else. But sometimes we just need to be reminded with good, consistent, biblical advice, that those same rules apply to us as well. And that's what Paul did with S and E. Now, I found something like this. This is nothing I created, but I found this on Pinterest or somewhere. But I saw this a long time. It was pretty cool. You may not be able to read it. I know it's kind of small. But it was the idea of, for parents raising kids, instead of just telling them what to do, tell them why you're telling them to do that with a biblical passage. And so over here, it may say, no fighting. That's what that little column right there says. And then over here, it lists Ephesians 4, verses 2 through 3, the verses we're studying right now. Be of one mind. Don't fight. And so the idea is, instead of just telling kids what to do, tell them why we're not supposed to do that. And I remember Megan and I with kids, nothing this fancy. I'm not that creative. But try it. There's a reason why we don't want you to yell. There's a reason why we don't want you to run around like a crazy person. There's a reason why we don't want you to hit each other. There's a reason why we don't want you to lie. Because the Bible says it. And if I could place a biblical passage with these ideas, it sure does make it a whole lot easier to reinforce. Don't stand on the furniture. Don't color or place stickers on the walls. Don't slam doors. And he gives a verse why. He said, we're going to be good stewards of the things that we have. Because that's the reason we don't want to do that. I love that little deal. I wish I could take credit for that. I can't. But instead of sometimes just telling somebody, hey, don't lie. Lying's wrong. Well, can we tell them the biblical reason why lying is wrong? Can we show them in the Bible that that's why we don't want them to lie or don't want them to cheat or don't want them to steal? I think sometimes we just need to be reminded that the laws and the rules apply to us as well. Sometimes we just need some good, solid biblical advice. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul did. He just said, you know what? You need to be of the same mind. Same thing he told congregations all over the world. Number 10. Did you notice this one? You don't necessarily have to take sides. Which side was Paul on? Was he on E's side or was he on S's side? And the answer is neither. All the Apostle Paul says, I implore E and I implore S to be of the same mind in the Lord. He didn't take sides. He didn't say, hey, E, you need to pay. S, you need to think about what you're doing. He took no sides in the matter. Because sometimes when a person who is in some of a position of leadership, that gets to be really, really touchy. Because if you take the side of one over the side of the other, then all of a sudden you may make the situation worse. Because now they don't trust you at all. And now, I will tell you this, and we know this by human nature, anytime people are fighting, it never just involves two people. No, we all have to go get allies. And we try to get people on our side. And it's not just two. It's not just E and S who are in conflict. It's E and all of E's friends against S and all of S's friends. And all of a sudden, if the person in charge comes in and takes one side or the other, you might take a very, very small problem and turn it into a huge issue. We need to be careful of that. And I want you to notice the Apostle Paul did not take sides. Now, if somebody was scripturally wrong, I promise you the Apostle Paul would have. But in something of a personal matter, all the Apostle Paul did, he said, fix it. Fix this problem. He did not take sides. All he said was, I implore that you be of the same mind in the Lord. I think that's very important. The Apostle Paul only encourages the women to put aside their dispute and to be reconciled. Fix this problem, whatever it might be. Sometimes we just need to teach others how to get along without declaring winners and losers. But that's not the way human nature works. We want to know that we're right and the other person's wrong. And we want someone to come in and tell us that we're right and the other person is wrong. Only problem is sometimes we're the one that's in the wrong. And probably more times than not, both people are in the wrong. And now if someone tries to come in and fix it, oftentimes it makes the problem worse. So when you're in a position of authority, I think you have to be careful how you handle squabbling and fighting below you. Sure, as the boss, you can come in and jump them. You can come in and you can solve it, but I don't know if that's always the wisest thing to do. It's not what the Apostle Paul did. Paul also wrote to the Romans in chapter 12, verse 13, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. See how he qualifies that? As much as depends on you. Don't be the problem. Fix it. Even if you're right, even if you're wrong, fix it. Just fix the situation and live peaceably with all men. Just because you're right, if a relationship in the church is broken because of it, that doesn't necessarily mean you're the winner just because you're right. Sometimes you just got to swallow your pride, whatever the situation is, and fix it. Sometimes for us to live peaceably with all men means we don't get our way. As long as it's not of a scriptural matter, does it really make any difference who the winner is? And I don't think that it does. Everyone has to learn how to pick their own battles. Symptoms are important, Most things are not. I found this. This is pretty interesting. This was a headline I found from a study at the University of Minnesota. I pulled this off the internet. Go ahead, try to read that, see if you can make any sense of it whatsoever. And then I'll tell you what I Googled it. It says, childhood self-regulation as a mechanism through which early over-controlling parenting is associated with adjustment in pre-adolescence. Go ahead, explain that nonsense. Well, I'll tell you where I found that was. There's kind of a common phrase you hear in education. What I Googled was helicopter parent. And so that's what it came up with. This was a study from the psychology department of the University of Minnesota dealing with what they call helicopter parents. I don't know if you ever heard that term or not. Helicopter parents is the parents, they hover all over their kids, hence the name. And anytime anything happens to that kid, they're on it like Johnny on the spot. I mean, that kid falls down, they're there, they pick him up. There's a fight on the playground, instantly, they're handling it. Something happens at school, the kid has a little bit of a disagreement with the teacher, they're instantly on the phone complaining to the teacher. Instantly taking care of every battle that the child has. And they're doing it with the best of intentions. But do you know what's happening? We've created a whole society of kids that don't know how to fight their own battles. And they just sit around and expect somebody else to fix the problem. They need mama to come in and tell them what's right and what's wrong. And it's a blurry line because as a parent, I mean, you want to be there for your kids. And you want to make sure that you're protecting your kids. And you're doing what is due diligence as a parent. You know, but there's a little scuffle on the playground, that doesn't always need to include the parents. Those kids have to learn how to handle that stuff on their own. If there's a little scuffle in the workplace and there's a little disagreement, those employees need to learn how to handle it without always having to go get the boss to take care of it. If there's a problem in the church, sometimes the members themselves need to learn how to work together and figure it out without having to call on the Apostle Paul and say, Paul, tell us who's right and who's wrong. We've got to be careful of this idea of the helicopter parent. Because what it says is, over-controlling parenting has to be associated with adjustment. As they get older, kids have to realize, oh, mama's not going to be there all the time. And now all these kids are having problems. The study went on and says, talking about colleges. And so here are these people in college, 23, 24, 25 years old, and they get a bad grade in college, or they had a problem with their admissions, and the first thing that was happening is their mom and daddies were calling, trying to fix the problem for them. We can't do that. As you become an adult, you got to learn to stand on your own two feet. And so that's the idea of being the helicopter parent. I found this quote, heard it one time. It was the exit quote of a coach in Midland as he got fired. I happened to pick it up in the Midland paper. He was a basketball coach in Midland. He had gotten canned, and this was his quote as he bid adieu to the city of Midland. He said, the problem with Midland is, instead of preparing the child for the path, too many are preparing the path for the child. And I would have high-fived him if I had seen him. Because that's a lot of the issue now. We want to make sure our kids have no problems. We want to make sure that everything is set up for them. If they don't get to play the position that they want to play, we'll put them on another team that lets them. If they're not in the class that we want, then we'll get them in the class that we think they should be in. And we try to do everything we can to make sure that road is perfect for the kid. And then all of a sudden the kid hits a little bit of adversity later on in life. You know what they do? They quit. Because they haven't been prepped for how to deal with disappointment. Because that's part of life. So I think that's an important part. We don't necessarily have to take sides. Sometimes we just got to learn to fight it out. Sometimes we got to learn how to deal with our disputes and our problems and do it in a scriptural and a proper way with the proper mindset. But we don't always need somebody dropping in and instantly solving our problems because then we never grow. Isn't that a beautiful picture right there? For the last couple months, y'all probably heard me complaining about my yard and how I've gone in and done sprinklers that nearly killed me and Drew. And then we finally had time to spray it. We sprayed it, I guess it's been a month ago, and somebody told me, wow, you couldn't have timed this any better with all this rain. We got it out of the now. We've had, 12 inches of rain, and this is what my backyard looks like as of today. Isn't that beautiful grass? You want to know the truth about it? That's really not the case. Because this is what the lady that sprayed it in, Clarice Wilde, told me. She said, you got to water that about about three times a day for a week. He said, you got to have just constantly run those sprinklers. Then she said, the second week, you need to water once a day. And then you start backing off once every other day. Once every 3 or 4 days. And she said, once you get about 3 or 4 weeks in, then you only want to water as needed. Because that forces the roots and that grass to go search for their own water. And that's what makes the yard strong. My yard looks beautiful right now. It is green. But you know what the problem is? It has rained constantly for the last 2.5 weeks. And that ground has been constantly wet. And the roots of my grass have not had to try at all to find water because my ground has yet to dry out. So it looks really pretty right now, and it's really spreading. But we can't be misled by this, because what happens in June next year when it doesn't rain at all? Is my grass going to know how to go find its own water? Is it going to be able to deal with a little disappointment? Is it going to be able to go through a cold winter? I don't know. Right now it looks really, really good. But don't be misled by that. Because that's not necessarily the sign of a strong yard. Nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to complain about the rain. But it may not have made my yard as strong as if there was less rain. Because sometimes you have to have a little disappointment. You got to learn how to fight through it. You got to learn how to battle. And you can't just have it handed to you all the time. So Philippians 2 or 12, I think this is kind of the verse that he was talking about. Maybe it's in the back of Paul's mind. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure. Remember, Paul's in prison. Paul's writing this letter. He's in prison. He can't run down and solve every problem for him. And he says, work out your own salvation. He says, not always like you have done, but now much more in my absence. Because, see, that's what makes you stronger. Now, if they had Apostle Paul on speed dial, and every time there was a problem, they just said, Paul, come fix it for us, the church would have never gotten stronger. Because they would have never had to really fight through adversity. So I think that's why he says to Aeneas, I implore you, be of the same mind. He didn't tell him who was right. He didn't tell him who was wrong. He didn't take sides. He just said, fix it. That's good advice. I read this from a John Maxwell book talking about empowerment. I know this is pretty small, but I just clipped it. This is great. I want you to think about an employer or a leader talking to someone who's below them. And he says there's 6 levels. This came from something called the Center for Organizational Leadership. I never heard of that. Apparently it's in Cincinnati, Ohio. But this is what it said. There's 6 levels. Think about it. It's pretty neat. So a problem occurs with a lower level employee. They go to management. First level is look into it, report, and I'll decide as the boss. I'll decide what to do. So that's the furthest separation. Go up a level. Look into it, report alternatives with pros and cons, and your recommendations. See how the boss is expecting the underling to make the recommendations now? Third level. Look into it. Let me know what you intend to do, but don't do it unless I say it's yes. See, now we've jumped up a level. Level 4. Look into it. Let me know what you intend to do and do it unless I, as the boss, say no. So we've gone up a little. One more. Take action. Let me know what you did. And then finally, take action. No further contact is required. I thought that was pretty powerful. Where are we on that relationship? At work? In the home? In the church? Though the leaders have that much confidence in us? Or would they be like, Brian, look into it, report it, but don't do a thing. Let me take care of it because I don't trust you. That's basically what that's saying. So there's different levels. And if we don't get people down to the bottom, then we're not going to grow. And so the idea is, sometimes you don't want to take sides. Sometimes you got to let people figure out what to do on their own when it's a good situation. Number 3. Offer legitimate resources. So we're going to go on to the next verse. Remember I said there's only 2 verses that discuss this at all. So we read verse 2 in Philippians chapter 4. Here's verse 3. And he says, and I urge you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel. Who is the true companion? Who is Paul talking about? He says, and I urge you also, true companion. Who's the true companion? I have no idea. The Bible doesn't tell us who this true companion is. Obviously, the Philippians knew who it was. There are some people that have been suggested by the commentators. Remember, Epaphroditus was the man from Philippi that went with Paul, and he got sick, and so he sent him back. So maybe it was Epaphroditus. Maybe it was Timothy, Silas. Maybe it was the Philippian church as a whole. I don't know. But there's this idea of there was somebody who was to be a well-known resource to help them solve and mediate this dispute. He said, come on, let's let this person help them. Help these women. And that word help translated means to assist by holding together. And so whoever this true companion was to help and assist by keeping these women together and having it all figured out. You know, we often say this, like, well, I tell you what, just let me know if I can help in any way. If there's anything I can do, just give me a call. But oftentimes, it's this very unspecific assistance that really doesn't mean anything and has no value. Hey, if you need anything, you just give me a call. And then we leave it at that. But as a leader, I believe we should offer legitimate resources to help teach others how to solve their disputes. Paul was very specific. Use the true companion. I don't know who the true companion is, but they did. Use this person to help solve the dispute. So a couple corollaries to my E and S principle. Personal disputes are unfortunately common in the church, but should be handled differently than doctrinal disputes. I believe that is a difference. Need to remember that. Small disputes, even of a personal nature, though, have the potential to cause great division. And then I read this somewhere, shovel when the pile is small. Try to take care of things when it's little before it gets out. So in conclusion, Paul desired for all the believers at Philippi to be of the same mind. And he specifically called out E and S in their dispute. I'm telling you one more time, I want you to be of the same mind. What was it, 6 times that he made that comment? That they would all be of the same mind? So E and S were no different. As an apostle and founder of the congregation, Paul had great influence to club, to chew, but he had great influence to do what he wanted to, but he chose not to overstep his boundaries and simply said, fix it. So can we learn something from the E in this principle? You know, I think we all have some sort of situation that's similar, or if we don't, we will. We'll find ourselves in that situation where we are responsible for the actions of others, and those others are fighting underneath us. And I think there's some good advice from a godly man, the Apostle Paul, how he handled a similar situation. The lesson is yours. I'd like to tell you I could give you the rest of the story, and I could tell you how E and S solved their dispute. I can't. But that's all that we know about it. It's that right there. But I trust that the Apostle Paul's wisdom and his discernment, he made the right call. We're now, I'd like to close off that Avalon Song invitation. We can help you in any way. Just stand ready to assist.